Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Lieutenant General Roger Brady, Air Force Deputy Chief of Staff, Manpower and Personnel. Also joining us in our conversation is Bob Bleimeister, partner in IBM's Human Capital Practice. General, force shaping and reductions are only part of the equation. The Air Force is involved in numerous force development programs as well. What is its fundamental purpose of the Force Development Initiative, and can you provide an overview of some of the initiative programs in place to enhance force development, such as the International Affairs Specialist Program?
The fundamental purpose of force development is to deliberately connect education, training, and experience, with the goal to be, as I said from the very outset, producing the right number of airmen and with the right competencies at the right time. And recall what I said earlier about we can't hire somebody off the street, you know, in mid-level in their career. So we grow our own. So the development part of the personnel business, the human resources business in the Air Force is absolutely critical to us. And so through the force development initiatives, we want to deliberately develop a cadre of airmen equipped to tackle our toughest challenges. Now, before we instituted force development, frankly, it was more ad hoc. Members accrued the right sets of skills eventually, but most of the time the skills were acquired outside of a formal system and perhaps sometimes even in spite of the formal system. So force development in its latest iteration, which began about 10 years ago actually, started with a realization that at sometimes at our most senior levels, our people were too stovepiped. In other words, their background was too narrow. And so we had very senior people who were very deep in a particular part of the Air Force, operations or maintenance or whatever. And yet we needed them and their expertise in a broader set of skills. So the initial effort began with this realization and the desire perhaps to develop along the way some second competencies for people, a primary competency perhaps and a secondary competency. That has become even more important as we find space operations becoming even more important. And now, of course, cyberspace operations. So we need a set of leaders and certainly mid-level people who understand the operational and the strategic level of war and can operate in the different media, the domains that we operate in, airspace and cyberspace. So our efforts are along that with that sight picture. Now, in terms of specific efforts, what we look at is young airmen and young officers come into the force, and initially their focus is on technical competency in what you might call an occupational skill. But as they get further into the career, we need to broaden them so that they see more of the operation, so they understand how their particular specialty contributes to the overall joint effort within the Air Force and with other services. So when we do that, then we focus on education. We focus on training and schools in which you put all of these people together and they gain a renewed respect for the different talents that are in the Air Force. And they learn how to bring all the different talents of the Air Force to bring to bear combat capabilities that are required. And we send people to school. We spend a lot of money educating our people. We send them to a school called Squadron Officer School, for example, at about the four-year point. These are captains, essentially. We then have an intermediate school when people have made major, and that's at about the 10, 11, 12-year point. We bring them, and that's where they learn more about command and staff. In fact, we have a school called the Air Command and Staff College. Then they go usually and have their first command, squadron command, or go to a staff position. And they'll come later to a senior development opportunity at our Air War College, et cetera, where they learn more about the operational art of war and how you bring all of the forces together. These people are lieutenant colonels and colonels, and they've been in the Air Force around 20 years by this point. So we then continue, even after people, those people who go on and perhaps become general officers and senior leaders in our Air Force, we provide them educational opportunities within the Air Force and also in the civilian world so that we can be as broad as we need to be, at the same time be technically proficient.
And how are you aligning these programs to support joint officer requirements as well?
That's a very good question. As you may know, there was an act passed, I believe, in 1986, the Goldwater-Nichols Act, which dictated joint service in joint assignments with other services at certain times in your career, particularly for those individuals who are going to rise to general officer rank, to flag rank. And so there are times in your career, and that usually comes about the time for most people at the major lieutenant colonel realm between 10 and 15 years. That's about the time that you would get into joint assignments. And that's where you learn a great deal about not only your own mission. You bring to that effort the expertise of an airman, and so that the services provide interdependent competencies that are unique to that service. And we feed the joint fight that way to be what we are, which is the best military in the world. And so joint experience exposes our people to that environment where we see all the competencies of the services and the unique capabilities that they have come together to perform a mission.
General, obviously you're making large investments in people. And whether you're in the public service or even in the private sector, you lose very talented people with critical skills at any given point in time. How do you go about correcting these potential skill imbalances, especially as a result of trying to drive towards a particular end strength requirement?
Well, as I said earlier, first of all, we have some experience with what the retention rates, you might say, are, how good we are at retaining different kinds of skill sets. Now, occasionally the economy will throw us a curve on that. But we have pretty good indications year in, year out, what people are going to do in the different skill sets. And quite frankly, we have some skill sets that are very difficult to retain because they have people with the skill sets have lots of options. But we're able to deal with that. Now, as you get more senior, we're able to use people more broadly. So specific technical expertise becomes relatively less important than managerial skills and leadership skills. So as we get more senior, we can use people a lot more broadly, and we typically just like industry would do. You know, you might move a CEO from one company to another where he really knows nothing about the business, but he understands business. It's the same in the Air Force. You can move many times a colonel or a general officer from one portion of the business to another where he may not have a specific technical, tactical expertise, but he or she understands the Air Force and how things fit together in the fight, and the leadership skills and certainly the talent of the people below you make you successful.
General, I'd like to shift our discussion to the personnel function and the personnel organization. We understand there's a lot of transformation being worked with the organization itself called an initiative personal services delivery. Could you tell us about PSD and what some of the goals are?
Certainly. And this is perhaps one of the most challenging things that we've done, certainly in the personnel community, in a long time. To be quite candid, personnel services, or HR as your audience might be more familiar with, in the Air Force has been and still is to a large degree very much a hands-on operation. If you want something done with your payroll, if you want something, if you need to talk about benefits, if you want to talk about your next assignment, if you want to talk about another training opportunity, in the Air Force, you can go talk to a human being. You can go talk to someone, and that's both good and bad because it in many cases it means you leave your job, you get in your car, you drive across base, you find a person who knows something about what you want to talk about. It's very much hands-on. About 90% of our operations are hands-on. The civilian world, industry, kind of moved away from that model long ago. So our challenge that we find ourselves in is how do we do that more efficiently without losing the personal touch and taking care of people? So we have really gone to school with looking at a lot of at the civilian world and how HR is done. And so we're looking at how we use call centers, how we transform our processes so that we can reach back from overseas to get things done, how people can go online and take care of a lot of the purely transactional things that have to do with personnel. If they need to change allotments in their pay, if they want to volunteer for an assignment, if they want to retire for that matter, they can now do that online. They don't have to get in their car, drive across base, find a parking spot, et cetera, et cetera. So what this means is our personnelists, HR in civilian terms, our specialists in the human capital are now going to be focusing less on transactional activities and more on being advisors to commanders as to how to train, develop, and take care of their people. So this means, quite frankly, that you're going to need fewer personnelists than we've had in the past. But I think it also means that it's going to be a richer job. Something that is different in the Air Force that will not change, different from much of the civilian community, is, again, that cradle-to-grave business we have with our people. So a large part of human resources in the Air Force is cradle-to-grave development of our people. And so a large part will be advising and being strategic advisors to commanders about how we take care of and mentor, evaluate, motivate, et cetera, our people. So I think it's an exciting possibility, but it's change, which means it's challenging. People view it with some suspicion sometimes, some fear perhaps, a little uneasiness about something that is that significant, because it's a very significant change in what personnelists have traditionally done in the Air Force. But our folks are starting to embrace it, and I think it's going to do great things for our people and for our Air Force. Something that's very interesting about this is that the change is also generational. Those of us who are a little older in the force and were around before computers came, as I like to say, we're used to having our hands held by personnelists. So it's a more difficult change for us to take care of ourselves online or in a call center. But the younger generation has never known anything but that. And so they're eager for it. So it's an interesting challenge as you relate to the different generations in the Air Force as how we take on this issue.
So it sounds like the personnel field isn't exempt from the reductions in force shaping initiatives that are going on.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. And what about are there initiatives to better integrate from a total force perspective how you manage civilians, reservists, even the contractor workforce?
Absolutely. In fact, we use our civilians and we use our Air National Guard and our reserves interchangeably with active duty. And that means that you've got to be as consistent as you can in how you manage those people. So what we're looking at is as part of our transformation is when we transform a process, an end-to-end global process, and because, as I said, because we move about a third of our people every year, we have to have global processes. Because if you move from here to Germany to Japan in your functional community, we don't want to have to retrain you every time you go there. So it's very important that we have global end-to-end processes. And when we change a process, unless there is a legal or statutory or Secretary of Defense directive that requires that we treat a component differently, those processes need to be the same. So that's a change for us, but we'll work through that. So unless there is a bona fide reason to do something differently in one component from another, we won't.
General, we've talked a lot about the focus on the core of the Air Force, and you talk about the 106,000 deployments that occur every year. With these ongoing deployment demands, I'm curious, how are you helping the airmen and their families maintain a total life balance? Are there any key initiatives focused on supporting the Air Force family?
Now, that's great. That's a great question. It's long been understood in the U.S. military that you recruit the member, but you retain the family. And regardless of how happy the military member may be, if the family's not, you're eventually going to lose that person. So families are absolutely critical to us. And unlike a military of generations before us, we're largely a married force. So there are we are principally a family organization. So yes, we are. We have great programs in our airmen and family support centers that provide support to people when to their families when they're gone. We have great programs where the individual that's left behind, the spouse and family that's left behind, we stay in contact with them. They can always rely upon on the service for support. We have sponsor programs that do that. We have capabilities to provide child care for people to give spouses a break. We have a very robust program when we reintegrate people back into a family after a deployment. Sometimes separations do interesting things to family relationships, and so if there are challenges or frictions when that happens, we follow up with people. We stay in contact with people so that we can provide families whatever support they need, and so there's just lots of effort goes into to make sure that we take care of the entire family unit.
That's fantastic. How will innovative change shape the Air Force of the future? We will ask Lieutenant General Roger Brady, Air Force Deputy Chief of Staff of Manpower and Personnel, to discuss this with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.